Welcome back to the latest Mountain West Connection podcast. If you're here this far with us, great. MWCConnection.com. You found us one way or another. Talking San Jose State as we're nearing the end of our West Division previews. We got Spartans tonight and then Aztec. So next show, whenever that may be, we're doing a couple of these early. So it might be a, next show. We'll just stick with that. Next show. I'm the rambling dummy up front, Jeremy Moss, here with Chris Hondris and Matt Kennerly hanging out watching. One of you is watching Euro Cup at the moment, which
I am watching Euro Cup at the moment.
And the result will be well known by the time people hear this show.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you already send me, like, all of a sudden start scream goal, it's not because San Jose actually scored a touchdown, but it's rather somebody scored. By the way, go Silicon Sparty.
What's that?
You know how they call Michigan State Sparty? Is that the mascot?
Mm-hmm.
San Jose State, because you're in Silicon Valley, we just call them Silicon Sparty.
Is that a new thing, or are you coining that right now?
That's a reigning thing from certain particular humorous college football websites for over the past couple of years. I'm just thinking that we should coin it.
So this is not breaking news?
No, not breaking news.
Dang, and I have stuff to play at my radio station, so we could do breaking news if we wanted to.
Also, let's not forget the accent in San Jose.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's a new thing as well, apparently.
Yeah.
All right, we're talking about the San Jose Spartans. All right, so where do we want to start? Do we want to start with new coaches? We talk about 80 minutes per school, so we got a lot of ground to cover, I guess. All right, so we'll go with the offense here with San Jose State. Obviously, the number one loss was Tyler Ervin to the NFL to my Houston Texans. I'll go with that because he should be a pretty big deal with their offense. But that's I would say this is possibly the biggest loss for any team offensively for the conference. Maybe?
Yeah, I would say so simply because everybody else who was considered a big loss and impact their team. Yeah, they were big impacts on their team, but I think Tyler Ervin really was – really, without Tyler Ervin, San Jose State, I don't think, would have made it to a bowl, and who knows how many wins they would have attained.
Well, I mean, I think the upside for San Jose State is that they've got guys who are still there on the roster who have had stretches of success running the football before. Like, I don't know if you guys remember way back in 2013 when Jared Lawson was, you know, the leading rusher for that team. He's still around. He's a senior now, so he could definitely pick up some of those carries that Ervin would have picked up last year. And they still have Thomas Tucker, who's had, you know, some stretches of success himself. So at least as far as the running game is concerned, there may not be one guy that replaces all of his production. It might be two guys or even more.
Well, even look at Kenny Potter. He rushed for nearly 650 yards last year, so he's going to be a guy who can move a little bit to supplement that a little bit ways. But like, you're right, they bring back nearly all their offense. He was their third leading receiver. There was Hansel Wilson. That's about it. One offensive lineman, Wes Schweitzer, who's an all-conference, but everybody else is back. I don't know if anybody, like I said, one guy's not going to replace Ervin because return game, receiving, rushing, but they're well suited to possibly have. I think Kenny Potter could be the best QB in the West, and that's a good thing to start with.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you go ahead, Chris.
Absolutely. For all the talk we've been given up to this point, we've talked about Johnny Stanton, the Nebraska transfer from UNLV or JUCO transfer. We've talked about Tyler Stewart and whoever's going to lead. We assume Chase and Virgil for Fresno State. Out of everybody we've talked about, and even Christian Chapman, who will be leading San Diego State, Kenny Potter's easily the most dynamic out of that, all those quarterbacks.
Yeah, it's just a matter of, you know, is he going to be more consistent than he was last year? Because there were several instances where he just kind of came out and wasn't the passer that they needed him to be. You know, in their conference opener against Air Force back early in September, you know, he was only 7-15, one touchdown, one interception. And I think at that point he was still sharing the job with Joe Gray, right?
Yeah. Who's gone. I think it was week three or four where it's Kenny Potter was named, you're the guy. Now Potter's gone and Blake Watson are gone as well. So there's no competition for him to maybe being conservative or looking over his shoulder a little bit, just thinking he can get pulled if he messes up.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, you could see flashes last year where, you know, he was a dynamic playmaker in games like UNLV was a big road win for them. Obviously, that was a team they probably should have beaten anyway, but he had a big game that game going over 300 yards, did the same thing with the big game against Hawaii. But now it's a matter of taking the next step and being more consistent against the tougher defenses that he's going to face this year. You know, like over under like 20 touchdowns passing this year for Kenny Potter.
I can see over. We had 15 last year,
over.
And he missed two games as well. And he was a part-time starter week three. He didn't really – it wasn't until he played at UNLV. If you look at his second half numbers, or three quarters almost, he played pretty well. Like versus Boise State, 28 of 41, three TDs, pair of interceptions, ran for 46 yards. He could be close to – not double, but 20 to 25 seems a conservative estimation for him.
And, I mean, you know, I think it helps San Jose State too, and Potter in particular, that he gets – pretty much all of his playmaking weapons on the outside back, right? You know, I mean, we talk a lot about Billy Freeman possibly being the best returning tight end in the conference, but Tyler Winston, for some reason, is still around. It seems like he's been there forever.
Yes.
You know, Tim Crawley was there last year, the last couple of years. He's still around. You know, they got new young guys like Justin Holmes, you know, and some of the guys coming up behind him were part of these big recruiting classes that Ron Carriger's been bringing in the last couple of years. The question is, you know, is it going to be a matter of like one guy stepping up, like a Devontae Boyd or Rashard Higgins, and putting up huge all-conference numbers? Or is it going to be like two or three guys that kind of share the load and keep the offense unpredictable? What do you guys think?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think Billy Freeman probably is the best tight end in the conference this year. And as a result, I think he's going to be the go-to guy for a lot. I mean, you could say Tyler Winston, yes. But at the same time, you know, Billy Freeman was the guy who was targeted the most. He had the most catches. And he was really, you know, your go-to guy. So if that number increases and Tyler Winston remains as your deep threat guy, I think that you're going to see Kenny Potter become even more accurate than he was last year. And he's going to hit that 20 touchdown mark absolutely no problem.
And he also, remember, hey, he hit the garbage can a couple off season, so that's a big deal, right?
This is true.
That's true. Pretty big target.
I mean, he completed 67% of his passes last year, so I would hope you know, he'd be able to hit a target like that.
When we talked about this, was it last show? Fresno State was the catch rate not very well, but if you look at the Spartans here, everybody's like the top guys are 65% or higher.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's a credit to Potter being able to get him the ball in a way that other quarterbacks in the division weren't able to last year. You know, for me, some of it is just, you know, if they can get a few more big plays, I think that'll offset the questions that surround the running game.
Very true, because like yards per target wasn't very good. I Thomas Tucker, he only had 11 catches and 13 targets, but they have nobody significantly who's getting 10-plus yards a target or even a catch, really. Maybe, yeah, catches you do, but I guess per target, what I'm looking here, you want some downfield threat. It's not going to be Freeman, tight end. Maybe it's Crawley. He's smaller, fastest guy, like 5'7", but that just helps the offense because, like you said, Irvin did everything. He would catch a downfield pass every so often last year. And he's the guy, he got 83% of his passes. Not hard when it's like a swing pass for short stuff, but that's still a big deal. And then because of Hansel Wilson, 70% catching the ball. So that's they have talent there, I think. It's just kind of they need another guy just to come up and fill a lot of roles.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I'd like to see is whether Tyler Winston can kind of bounce back and be the guy I think a lot of Spartan fans expected he might be after 2013. You know, because I remember the game that he had against Fresno State when he basically ruined their last BCS chances.
Black Friday.
Yeah, but he never really took that last step. And so, you know, he's obviously a one chance, one last chance to do that. He's got familiarity with the system. So I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on him to step up and be a major contributor to this offense.
That's true. In 2014, he had 78 receptions. And then this year, 35, 13, 58. So he's kind of, it's a little bit, you bring talent around him, but if you have 78 receptions, going in half is a pretty big deal. He played 8 games, so that's also an issue as well. That kind of looks into it. You play 25% less games. But even if he plays 4 more and gets maybe 60 receptions, I would say, if he plays the whole season.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, Potter will also be well served if the offensive line, you know, there's a lot of experience on this line, but it's not like they were necessarily very good last year. They gave up more sacks than anybody else in the conference. Uh-oh. They allowed nearly 3 sacks a game. And if San Jose State wants to challenge for the division title, that number has to go down. If they can be good, they don't necessarily need to be great, but they need to be able to keep Potter upright for them to have a chance in a lot of these games this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that's going to help, hopefully, Potter remain upright is the fact that you're going to have 4 solid returners on that offensive line. The only person that you're losing, which I guess is a big loss, is Wes Schweitzer, who was second All Mountain West last year. But he had 38 career starts through his college career. So that is a big loss. But at the same time, you're going to have enough guys who are going to come back and, you know, help that left tackle regain some spots.
Well, and not only that, you know, they've recruited incredibly well for their position in the last couple of years. And they've got like 3 or 4 three-star freshmen who could step up and, you know, be that depth that the Spartans might need as the season goes on.
Right. It's kind of hard to like tell whether any of these guys will see time in this year, because you're so loaded on juniors and seniors. But if you look at the depth chart, they're so loaded on freshmen and redshirt freshmen. It's ridiculous.
So what do you guys expect from the offense and overall? Because when they need a new running back, they need a second or third receiver to make up just for Irvin's statistical running and passing combination. Where do you guys predict this offense will be within the conference?
Well, I think I mean, am I wrong in saying that we're all pretty high on Kenny Potter's potential?
Yes.
I mean, to me, I think this has the potential to be like a top 4 offense.
Go ahead, continue.
I was just going to say, you know, they were 8th last year, but they still managed to score about 28 points a game.
8th in what?
8th in the conference.
For what, passing or?
In scoring offense.
Oh, sorry, scoring. You're like, I'm looking at one thing, I'm like, wait, I see 5th in total offense here. So scoring needs more of an issue, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that, you know, even despite losing Irvin, if Potter takes a step forward with all the weapons that he has coming back around him, you know, there were only 3 teams that topped 30 points a game last year, and I think that the Spartans could be one of those teams this time around.
I could see.
Yeah, absolutely. I fully expect them to be top 4 within the conference in scoring. And here's the thing. I am more terrified with San Jose State. I am more terrified of the defense. I think the offense is going to do its job, get stuff done, but the defense is really the wild card, and it's the defense that I think will allow San Jose State to not make a bowl game or to not continue that trend upwards.
Interesting. One last thing really quick before we get to the defense. I know we joked all the time last year and their red zone offense was terrible. They're actually changed. That actually moved quite a bit in their favor. They're actually 89% scoring rate. Because I remember years before, past couple years, we joked, hand the ball off to Irvin at 30 or have Potter or Joe Gray throw a 40-yard touchdown pass, because they every time they got close, it was just a stonewall for field goals or no points. So if they can keep that up, that'll also help the offense get above 30-plus per game.
Yeah, that was definitely the joke of 2014, and they definitely turned it around in 2015.
Rush defense? We'll see, because that also wasn't very good of late.
Yeah, that was going to be the point that I made, because I think there's a lot of potential on this defense as well, but I think that there are more questions surrounding this defense than there are around the offense. They were 102nd nationally in run defense last year, and they're losing a couple of guys who were key contributors in that front seven. You know, Tony Popovich is gone. Maybe he's the only guy. But, you know, they're bringing nearly everybody back on that front seven, but they weren't very good. And so my question is, are they going to be able to step it up?
Well, they also have a new defensive coordinator. Ron English is in town now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, these are guys that, you know, they got pushed around a lot last year on the ground. So I have a question about whether having that experience under the belt is actually going to make any kind of difference.
You would hope so, even though it's not good experience. At least they've played before. There could be guys who come in who redshirted or junior college guys, but I don't recall if they put out a depth chart or not or too much of one. But if they played a lot last year, yeah, they weren't great. They've improved. The rush, it's hard to not be much worse, the rush defense they've had been the past 2 to 5 years. I would say it's a little bit better, but it's still, I don't see a huge leap coming from, even with what they have, 6 to 8 returning starters back.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things that if you look at the splits, you know, one of the things that they talk about in Bill C's preview overall is that there were a lot of inconsistencies around the offense and the defense. And that kind of bears itself out in the run defense too. Like in the 6 games that they won, they only gave up 4.3 yards per carry, which is actually pretty decent. That helps them. That helps you stay in a lot of games. But in the losses, they gave up 5.5 yards per carry, and they gave up 21 touchdowns on the ground in those losses. So, you know, you want to hope that it's closer to that first figure than the second one, I think.
Yeah, and this is going to be a definite more experienced defensive end this year, because you've got 5 seniors on the squad, a few juniors, a couple sophomores, but and really there wasn't really any recruiting going into freshmen this year. So the experience is there. The question is, what are they going to do with that experience? And not only that, I'll even extend it even more. They have 4 seniors in their linebacking squad this year.
Let's get Christian Taga. He's probably the best. Yeah, he could be the best linebacker in the conference or top first team, most likely, with, 9 tackles for loss, a sack, nearly 100 tackles. That's what's weird.
And now he doesn't have to deal with competing against Camille Correa, the Virgil brothers.
Everybody from Utah State.
Feely down south. You know, you don't have to deal with competing against these linebackers. There's just very much a chance he better be making first-team all-conference this year.
Yeah, the only concern outside of, there's a good amount of concerns. They have players back, but secondary is interesting because they've had multiple guys in the NFL, like Benet Benwickery with Carolina. They lose Jimmy Pruitt, Cleven Wallace, and Vincent Miles Jr. there. They've always had a good secondary. No matter what you can say, their pass defense – you could say, they're playing against teams that are taking advantage of their pretty bad rush defense. But for most of last year, if I'm correct, I should have it here, but weren't they giving up like less than 100 yards per game? They gave 157 yards per game last year, best in the conference, one of the best in the country.
They ranked second in pass defense last year in the country.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, some of that is symptomatic of the teams they were playing, though, yeah. Right? Like, they played Air Force, which doesn't...
New Mexico, San Diego State.
New Mexico, San Diego State, yeah. So, I mean, it's one of those situations where, you know, who needs to throw the football when you can run it right down their throat?
True, but they also had, look how many guys in the NFL as well. So that's a good point, but they also have guys who make plays also, but they're losing 3 or 4 starters. And so it still could be the same thing a little bit where rush defense is going to be used against more than passing because it's a weaker position, but they still... That's actually kind of a bigger concern almost because, if we can now run and pass against this defense, that could open up who knows how many points they'll give up every game.
Yeah, I'm just that's one of those things. That's one of those things where you're just kind of thinking about, oh boy, because you're going to play against a Tulsa team that is a pass heavy. You're going to play against a Utah team that can either run or pass.
Well, that's debatable if they can do either.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to play against Boise State, which can do either, but is going to be more reliant on the pass. And then, of course, you've got your interdivisional teams, which are more reliant on the run. So this is one of those things where the defense can be in a lot of trouble if Ron English doesn't get his feet wet very quick.
Here's the counter argument to that. They have a lot of very well regarded young talent in that secondary. Mm-hmm. That, you know, if there's one area where Ron Carriger's recruiting is going to pay dividends, it's probably going to be there. Because I'm looking and I see like five guys with at least 3-star recruiting rankings on Bill C's thing.
Yeah.
Who are going to be redshirt freshmen and sophomores this year. So they're going to have options, and it might be competitive going into fall camp, but I think that there's a lot of promise here, whether it's, you know, at safety with guys like Jeremy Kelly and David Williams, or at cornerback with Teyon Mason, who was a 4-star recruit, or Dakari Monroe. So, you know, yeah, they lost a lot of returning experienced talent in the backfield, but if that young talent take a leap forward, that could make them a very dangerous team in the West.
I agree. And look for Andre Cicciari to be probably their best cornerback. As 8 pass breakups, a couple interceptions, 30-something tackles. He could be take over Maurice Knight. Like those, that, well, they're corner, nickel, safety. They're kind of, he, Cicciari plays kind of whatever, nickel and cornerback. But I think he could be the guy to step up. But yeah, they have all this talent come in. It's new talent, so who knows how long it'll take for them to get going. They do have, like, week one, Tulsa. That'll be a huge test against Philip Montgomery, who's the former OC of Baylor a couple years ago. And so what he's going to be doing there, and it's a road game.
I've got a bold prediction.
What's your bold prediction?
I say Teyon Mason makes the starting squad somehow.
Okay.
And he's going to make an impact in that first Tulsa game.
And an impact.
Yeah.
All
right. That's cool. Should we get to games in? I think that's enough going over the – anything else you want to discuss really quick about individual stuff, coaching of this?
Austin Lopez is gone, but you have Michael Carrizosa, who was one of the best punters in the game last year.
That's one of those underrated things that, you know, field position matters. And to a game that – to a team that might be playing a lot of close games one way or the other this year – having a weapon like that who could tilt the field in your favor could be a big deal in given weeks.
I guess also with that, with Tyler Irvin returning so many kicks and punts, that's a big loss there as well, because on a return kickoff, he was, 24 game yards per game, and so that's probably average start position past the 20 by a couple yards, so I don't know who will replace him or what they'll kind of do or try to do there, if they'll put a DB or another receiver back there or something, but that goes long with what Irvin can do. That's a big loss there. So that's another area where special teams is huge. Lopez and Irvin are probably one of the bigger losses of special teams within the league. So that's a good point there for Lopez being gone for Mr. Automatic kick and field goals there. All right.
So we're starting with the games.
Week one, like I said, at Tulsa. They've been okay. I made a mistake months ago. I guess they're now in the American Conference. Is that still correct as of today?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So I think I did something months ago. Oh, Conference USA. But all the good teams left Conference USA. So historically, we all know Tulsa. Who was on the roster? Was it Gus Malzone, their OC, about 5 to 8 years ago? It kind of started with him, with them just kind of passing around like crazy.
I remember Todd Graham was there.
I know Todd Graham was there. I think even before them, it was Gus. Maybe Gus Malzahn.
Malzahn was at Arkansas State. I don't think he was at Tulsa.
I think it was before that. Maybe not, but it's been – they've just been known to have a crazy offense. He had passing offense going for a couple hundreds of yards per game, 400 yards per game and doing it. And if that's the case, still with, like I said, Montgomery's their new head coach from Baylor. This is his second year, I believe. And he's still probably looking for right talents, right type of players to fit that scheme. But if it's – improved from last year to this year, this is a pretty stiff test for the Spartans in week one.
Wow, Jeremy, you were right. He was at Tulsa 2007-2008.
Yeah, got it.
Good call.
I know a few things, I believe.
I think, just like I said last week about Fresno State, I think this is going to be a competitive loss for San Jose State. I think it's a good game for them to get their feet wet, see what they got. But being that this game is at Tulsa, I don't think they're going to win.
Well, they also returned Dane Evans as their QB, and he was led. The American had some, like, I think I mentioned this last show, because isn't, I think somebody else is playing Tulsa, I believe, within the league. But he was better.
Fresno was.
Yeah, Fresno. He's better than Paxton Lynch, better than Gunnar Kill, in yards per game, even better, like Blake Kemp, PJ Walker, Greg Ward. He overseen more yards per game than all those by quite a bit, by over 40 yards per game, 25 TDs, 8 picks. So this is going to be like, if you think that guy's going to have a big game, was it Teron Mason for week, or Theon Mason week one, Chris? He'll have plenty of opportunities to make some plays.
See, you know what I think? You know who I think is going to have a big game in that game? Kenny Potter.
Ooh.
Because that defense, as you might recall, is terrible.
It's about as bad as Baylor's defense.
Like, oh. if you're looking for a game that's going to have a lot of points in week one,
this is it.
This is probably going to be it.
Take the over.
It wouldn't shock me if both these teams drop 40 on each other.
Let me ask you this really quick before we get going. I hope you're not looking at it, but total yards per game, do you guys know what Tulsa gave up per game?
Wasn't it like 600?
I want to say it was like 550, 600.
Chris is close. 536 per game.
I remember they were like next to last in the FBS, right?
They were last in the American Conference. That wouldn't surprise me that they're in the bottom 1% of the whole FBS. Let's see here real quick. They beat up Texas Tech and Kansas.
And so with that in mind, that's why I think it would be a competitive win for the Spartans. Because I think the defense that San Jose is putting together is going to be just a little bit better than Tulsa's. And if it turns into a track meet, and it turns down, and it comes down to who's going to make one stop, I'd put my money on the Spartans.
For a stop?
Yeah.
Okay. No, that's fine. That's just saying their defense is going to win them a game. That's pretty bold, I would say.
Their defense doesn't have to win them this game.
Well, I'm just saying if you're making a stop, yeah. Well, I could see it either way. It's on the road. If their defense is that bad, you're right. It's either going to be whoever makes a stop or whoever. It's a couple things. Whoever makes a stop at one point in the game, whether that's a field goal or a forced punt or a turnover on downs, it's going to come down to a swing of possession, whether it be, I know this is more than a few things, but it's like one or two plays, like say a good kick return for a touchdown, an interception or a turnover on downs, or you hold Tulsa or they hold San Jose State to say back-to-back field goals where they go touchdown. It'll be something like that. It may not be the end of the game, but it could be, say, in the second quarter, they exchange the same points, and then one team gets a touchdown, the other team only gets a field goal or no points on one or two possessions. Because this will be over 100 points? I don't know. At least 80, I could see that. 70 to 80 probably be the over-under when it's set in next month.
No, it better be 90.
90? Wasn't there a couple Baylor games people wanted to get to 100? Like, wasn't Baylor, Texas Tech or something, they wanted the over-under set at 100, I believe?
Something like that, yeah.
So I think a win's a very realistic possibility. Road, new OC, and a new secondary, that's where my concern is. But I think I wouldn't be surprised if they win, but I'm probably not going to lean that way.
Okay, so Portland State, we're all assuming is a win.
Victory.
Yeah.
And they somehow wrangled Utah to come to San Jose. That'll be interesting.
You blame Stanford for that.
You blame Stanford for that because they're not playing Stanford this year?
Exactly. They needed a team in red to come to Spartan Stadium.
That really should be the big game. Isn't it now going to be called like the Bill Walsh Classic or something going forward?
It's always been called the Bill Walsh Classic.
Okay. I just stumbled across that a year or two ago. But I think, aren't they renewing the series down the road?
Something like that. But anyway, Utah, yeah, no chance.
No chance?
What about you? I mean, you're the one that's most familiar with the Utes going into this year, Jeremy. What can you tell us?
So here's the thing. They don't have they lose Travis Wilson, who we're familiar with, lighting up Fresno State and playing various Mountain West teams, like Colorado State a couple years ago in the bowl game. They have no quarterback. They're set on not just one or two, but three quarterbacks who are in the mix. One was injured during part of spring camp, so we don't know who that'll be. But again, Travis Wilson, he wasn't, like, being a Ute fan, when they got up to like top five in the country, I'm like, holy crap, are they really the fifth best team? And I'm just waiting for the Travis Wilson shoe to drop where he has like two interceptions, 150 yards, and that's it. And that happened against USC. And so I don't see quarterback play being that much worse or really that much better, because new player, whoever that may be, Troy Williams is probably going to be the guy. But even though Wilson was experienced, he wasn't like some world beater. He could be pretty good, but then again, he could just be just awful. And then they lose. I should know this guy. I'm blanking on the running back. Devontae Booker, excuse me. He's with the Broncos. He was one of the best running backs in years. They have a new running back as well, and Joe Williams. He came in late in the year, played a couple games, and he'll be pretty good. But the main concern is the defensive front, which will be just overmatched, even experienced Spartans line. And that's where it'll be the Utah probably in week three rely more on their defense and offense and a heavy dose of running the ball. And as we know, Spartans rush defense hasn't been great. If Joe Williams just kind of does what he wants, Utah probably should win and win by a couple touchdowns. But that's, if you know what Utah's done, it's all defense. And then if they get a decent QB, that's just a bonus.
Yeah, I had to go back. I had to go and look up their depth chart to see who all was coming back. Haven't they been talking about Lola Tulele as like a first round pick in the future or something like
that? Yeah, his brother's Star Lotulele at the Panthers. And so he could be on the defensive front line.
Yeah. I thought I had read something where they said there were things saying he was better than his brother, which is kind of scary.
That is being talked about here. And it's some people trying to temper that expectations, but you got the name, you're starting, same school, you're all conference most likely, I believe. And yeah, they're just a defensive front. It could have him, but that's just an extra dude where he's just a beast. And they lose guys, but like there's Jared Norris, linebacker, a few other guys. Gianni Paul's gone. And so they do have to replace that area. But yeah, the front with Utah, their defense with Kyle Whittingham, he's always had a great defense. And so they do have a new defensive coordinator. They have Morgan Scalley there now, and they finally settled. The funniest thing about Utah, they've had eight offensive coordinators in like 7 years or something. They're finally sticking with the same one back-to-back years, which is a shock. But it's a team where it's deep. Utah's going to dominate defensively and want to run the ball quite a bit. They're not the spread team as they were anymore. They'll still do some shotgun, but they'll do handoff out of shotgun and somewhat passing, but running and defense is where this is what their main objective is to win games this year.
It's like San Jose State. Possibly. Sorry, San Diego State.
There you go. That's the right team.
Yeah.
Okay, so with all of that information in hand, I'm starting to think, like, you know, San Jose State's line might be good, but I'm starting to wonder if they'll be able to hold up against strong pass rushes like Utah might throw at them. And so with that in mind, you know, if Kenny Potter's having a rough day, I would probably call that, like, a competitive loss.
I could see that because here's the thing about Utah's defense. Last year was just okay.
Touchdowns considered a competitive loss? Could we consider that a competitive loss?
I think it would be closer than that. I think it'd be a one score game.
Oh really? I think it'd be a two touchdown competitive loss, where it's like Utah won't pull away until the very end.
It depends on Utah what team shows up, because we saw them play Utah State. Utah State wasn't in the same category because at one point last year, Utes were top 10, top 5 playoff team talked about before they blew it versus USC and then a few other teams down the road. But like they beat Fresno easily. The Oregon game was still, well, that's amazing. It was an anomaly by any stretch of the mean where they had all the special teams plays. The punter botches it but catches it and runs 30 yards for first down. The fake kick return, punt return. That's not the team. It's more likely, and even the Cal team, if you look at that game, they only won by 6 points and forced Jared Goff into 5 interceptions last year, and they still almost lost that game. And so it's an up or down type of team. Like with Utah State, backup quarterback Kent Myers came in with injured Chucky Keene, excuse me. He got hurt during that game but still tried to limp and play for some reason. They blow up Fresno. They lose to Arizona. They're just a weird team, and the defense last year, it's going to be better, but they're just middle of the pack in the country at like 42nd in yards per game. But if the main thing, I think, they'll have a good pass rush. If they get to Kenny Potter, that'll be the end of the day for the Spartan team. So I think it could be more 17-plus for Utah winning.
Now, here's an interesting matchup. Iowa State.
9 a.m. Pacific kickoff, 9 a.m.
It's an early kickoff, but I don't know what to make of Iowa State because they've been just so horribly bad the last few years. I want to say that the Spartans have a good chance.
No, it's a victory. I'm calling victory right now. Come on, Iowa State. I'm not even looking at any numbers or anything, and I think they should win that game.
See, to me, I think Iowa State's actually very similar to San Jose State. And that they have, you know, a quarterback who's probably on the rise. They got Joel Lanning out there in Ames. Mm-hmm. They have
new head coach.
They do have a new
Matt
head coach
Campbell from Toledo.
Who has a history of success running, quarterback efficient offenses. They have a pretty good runner in Mike Warren, who could pose a problem. I'm trying to just go down this preview real quick.
No, that's fine. I'd even bother to look at them because I knew that new head coach there, bottom 75% pass defense, rush defense in the Big 12, which was an outside of Oklahoma and TCU and Baylor, there weren't that many great teams. Oklahoma State was pretty good, but that can be deceptive a bit.
They're replacing a lot along the line, too. So even though San Jose State might not have a great pass rush, that's one of those things where, both quarterbacks might have pretty big games and make it kind of a high scoring affair. So to me, I think I would call that a win. I think it would be a close win, but I think that they have enough playmakers to kind of outplay this defense.
Yeah, being in Big 12, it's hard to tell how good your defense is sometimes because with how many high-powered offenses are, but they gave up almost 6.5 yards per play. And that's you can go by that more than yards per game or total yards. So yards per play, they didn't do that many plays comparatively like against TCU, Oklahoma State, and Texas Tech who were on the field for 1,000 defensive plays last year. Still over 6 yards per play was still at the bottom of the conference, and that's a good indicator of Spartans can have some big plays by whomever. I think they should be able to win. It'll be competitive, but I think Spartans should win. Even though it's on the road, it shouldn't have an impact, really.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think this is a game that San Jose State should win. And considering, it's definitely not out of the rain, but at the same time, I'm concerned about that kickoff time, and I'm concerned about the ability of San Jose State to play on the road right now as a young team.
So at this point,
I'm going to call it a stupid upset loss.
Interesting. At this point, they could honestly be 1-3, or maybe even, I don't think they'll beat Utah, but between 1-3 and 2-2 is where they're probably going to be. Or excuse me, 3-1 and 2-2 is probably where they'll be at. Maybe one win if it's Iowa State. Because like I said, I'm not super confident in Tulsa being that a victory. So 1-3, and Portland State's a decent FCS team as well.
All right, so then October 1st at New Mexico.
Oh.
Bill Connolly calls this one a 50-50 game, literally.
His numbers say exactly 50%.
Win probability, 50%.
Oh, man.
Which is fine, because we just talked about this rush defense, and I just... I think Kenny Potter's going to throw a ton against New Mexico, but I think that New Mexico doesn't have to pass to win, and they're not, and they're too strong in the run game.
They lose Jarrell Presley, which is a big deal, but me and Chris said this for the past 2 years, if New Mexico's defense can be average, which we saw last year, they're a team that can literally beat anybody. Beat Boise State. They nearly beat Air Force. They're almost one.
They literally did beat Boise State last year. I remember.
It's kind of interesting because it's a game that's really obvious strengths versus kind of questionable weaknesses on both sides. I wish I had the box score from last year in front of me, which San Jose State won that game last year. Does anybody remember anything about that game?
I'll pull it up really quick. But one thing to know about they were worse in the conference. They gave up the most yards per game on the passing front for the Lobos. So,
yeah, I mean, to me, it's a matter of
what's Tyler Irvin.
Are the Lobos going to be able to pace a play with their triple option attack and keep Kenny Potter off the field?
Here's what happened, though. Here's the reason that lost. There was a 71-yard run by Tyler Irvin, 263 yards on him, and they were just big pass plays. Kenny Potter had 2 touchdown passes, 1 for 35, 1 for 25. So the passing game in Irvin was the reason they got the win.
Yeah, I mean, I have my doubts. I think this is the kind of game that New Mexico, you know, if their defense can take a step forward, but we'll get to that at some point.
Also, really quick, they started Austin Apodaca at quarterback, so that could be a reason as well. San Jose State won that game. He was 8 for 20.
Yeah, I mean, I think if the offense has limited opportunities because New Mexico's kind of controlling the game, the kind of the pace of the game, I think that's the kind of thing that worked in the Lobos' favor. So I have this one as a loss for San Jose State.
So do I.
I do too as well. Ooh,
across the board. All right, so Hawaii, that's at home. They have Hawaii, Nevada. I think they'll probably split those games. I think they'll beat Hawaii. I don't think we need to discuss too much into that. Is that a correct assumption?
I had both of those as wins myself.
And Nevada?
Hawaii and Nevada.
Correctly. I think I also did.
I think Nevada and San Jose State will be a competitive game. We don't need to go as detailed. We'll discuss these games back and forth as we go through every team, but you've heard of the Nevada show. We like James Butler. They lose a lot of defense. That running attack is a big deal for defensively for Nevada. And I just think being at home in Nevada is not going to impress anybody too much, and neither is San Jose State, but I think the Spartans should win that at home. And then Aztecs and San Jose State could be a sneaky game, but Donald Pumphrey's just too good.
Yeah, I think that was actually one of their worst performances last year when they faced the Aztecs. So, I mean, yeah, obviously the Aztecs are probably going to be the class of the division. They're probably going to have the best defense in the division. But I would actually be kind of surprised if they had a second straight clunker. I think it'll be a little bit closer, but I still have the Aztecs winning that game.
Yeah, it makes sense. Like last year, Pumphrey had 152 yards, but that's 7 yards of carry, touchdown. He went 200 total yards just about with the receiving game as well. It can be more competitive, but it's – I don't see San Jose State getting the victory here.
No, absolutely not. That's going to be –
On to the Rebels here. So, Chris, how about you start with this one for your favorite team outside of Boise State?
My second favorite team. It's funny. They play my two favorite teams week by week. I called UNLV as a win earlier in terms of UNLV winning this game, and I'm kind of holding by it simply because that 1-2 punch, that 1-2-3 punch with UNLV, you have potentially Johnny Stanton with Keith Whiteley or Xavier Campbell, and then Devontae Boyd, and all of them working together, I think will be a good punch. And their defense has definitely improved. Whereas this defense, once again, by October 29th, we should know how much San Jose State's defense has improved. And really whether the youngsters are making a huge impact or not. But, I mean, this early in the game, I'm still saying that UNLV is going to kind of squeak this out.
I think they could. This is week nine of 10 of games in a row. It's at home, but it's not going to be anything simple because it just you're tired at this point. You're playing game nine after playing at San Diego State. You come back home. UNLV is going to be competing for a bowl spot, and the Spartans are probably – not quite there yet.
See, I think that this game works out favorably for San Jose State because I think if they can force the Rebels to throw the ball, I think what you're doing there is kind of going strength on strength.
Oh, wait, you know what? No, I said UNLV was going to lose this game. Now that I think about it, yeah, because I said they were going to beat Fresno but lose against San Jose State.
Yeah. So
contradict ourselves here in June, okay? It's all right.
I'm making my predictions and I'm sticking to it. I have this one as a San Jose State win.
I think it could be. It's just it should be. But UNLV will have. I think they've improved enough. And like I said, you're playing. Don't want to repeat too much, but you're playing so many games in a row. You're at home. You should win. It is a Saturday game. Also, they have one extra day to prepare or rest wise playing at San Diego. That's a Friday night game the week prior. I'll go with the Spartans to win at home, but I'm not. I probably would like. It's weird. I'm more comfortable with Tulsa than this game for some reason. For San Jose State winning, I probably shouldn't be, but I'll go with Spartans. They're at home, and yeah, home team wins. I guess, is that fair?
Yeah, I'm going with Spartans. I'm changing my mind and saying Spartans here.
unless Johnny Stanton is a guy and can and light it up, I think that's the kind of.
Well, if Johnny Stanton becomes basically the top quarterback in the West Division, then I think things will change. But we're not sure about that yet.
We'll get to that later. We'll know that for our gigantic conference preview before that Hawaii-Cal game. So we have plenty of time to see what's going on. And then their final game before a bye, finally, at Boise State. I don't think they'll have enough to beat the Broncos, even though Boise loses a lot on defense. Look for a lot of Jerry McNichols to run against the Spartans front seven.
Yeah, I have this one as a loss, too.
Well, in this game, Boise State struggled last year. But not just that. You're talking about, they had a great pass defense last year, and it was exposed. I can't remember his name now. Quarterback, Boise State.
Brett Rippin.
Brett Rippin was actually exposed in this game. You know, he had horrible statistics, only passed for 150 yards, which was the second time, I think, that San Jose State gave up more than 100 yards in the game.
Hold on, I got it ready. Actually, still not great, 197, but still okay. Not over the top where he's just crushing it.
Yeah, I think Rippin will have learned a lot by then. I think this game is going to be much more dominant than it was last year.
And McNichols had nearly 200 yards as well.
Yeah. And I think Boise State probably pulls this one out by about 20.
That much? That's about last year, 40-23. Boise has too many weapons against this team. The only way I could see the Spartans getting in is if it's a game like New Mexico or Air Force, where it's just this is the one game where somehow they have like six turnovers in the first quarter or something. But you can't count on that ever happening once a year. But San Jose State's defense had to come up big and big plays, because Boise's offense they passed and run okay last year. Expect them to pass better more this year. McNichols, he has confidence he'll run nearly at will with his he did have one run for 88, so that's, you take that out, that's still 20 for 100. It's still pretty big deal, but I don't see any way Boise will lose this at home.
All right, after the bye week, Air Force.
Deep breath, they get a break there. I don't think they can beat Air Force. We could cut to the chase, but if we still don't fully agree with what the rush defense can do, because Air Force isn't throwing, even Nate Romine, they're not going to throw a ton, probably more than they have, but it's going to be a heavy dose of the triple option and the Air Force victory. I could see it by 2 to 3 touchdowns.
I think this is my stupid upset pick. I think they can beat Air Force.
And I
think it's because, you know, Air Force, to me, could be a little bit soft in the secondary. And I think with all of the, like I said, with the passing attack, I expect it to be a strength this year. That's something that, you know, even if Air Force kind of plays keep away with the triple option, I think that, you know, San Jose State could put together some big plays and kind of keep the Falcons at arm's length.
They'll need to take advantage of the few carries they have. But really quick, looking at Air Force, they returned their top 5 defenders. They're all seniors, defensive back players. And actually, they only lose one player last year who didn't play.
Is Weston Steelhammer returning?
Yes, he is.
Yeah. No, that Air Force wins this. Sorry.
Now, it could still happen because Steelhammer, like, here's one guy. Okay, when we get to Air Force, it'll be exciting because they're secondary. 17 pass breakups by Roland Latipo. Yeah, Roland Latipo. 17 pass breakups. That's a pretty big deal. But even with all these players back, their secondary's never been, outside of having what Anthony Wright a couple years ago, who's an All-American, still hammers the next guy, but they have players there, but they're undersized a little bit. Some of them are. Like, you got guys 5'10", maybe 6 feet barely, but that is, Matt's correct. Like, this is the only way they're probably going to be able to beat Air Force, take advantage when they actually have the ball, and then just bring out 3 wides, 4 wides, and go deep against them.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. What do they have? One last game.
Final matchup.
Fresno State.
Well, I already told you what I thought was going to happen with this game.
We talked about it last show, right?
Yeah, true, we did talk. I think the Bulldogs are going to win this game.
I'm with you. I think Fresno State wants the V.
Is there a trophy in this game involved at all?
What? Yes.
It's a silver looking V that's like half tech and half like viney.
That's right. Is there a name for
it? It's the Valley Trophy.
Okay.
Yes.
It's not the conflict, is it?
No.
Okay. I'm just making sure. I remember it now. There's a V. I didn't know if there was a specific name or something like.
It's a stupid trophy game. I mean, it's a stupid name for the trophy, but the trophy's kind of cool. I don't know, Matt. You treat this as a rivalry. Do you think any different?
I mean, they've been rivals for like 80 years. So, to me, it's the old cliche of you can't always trust the numbers. I think that, like we discussed last week, Fresno State's got a lot of promise, and I think if they're playing at home, they're going to be a lot tougher than they would be if this game were in San Jose State.
Let me ask you this really quick then. Who do you consider your rival at Fresno State? I know a lot of people, I think, want San Diego State to be that.
Boise.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just making sure. Just, hey, trying to educate people out there, like myself, apparently.
Yeah, I think now what you would consider with Boise State, especially with Idaho dropping down to FCS, Nevada's our number one rival. Fresno State's our number two rival.
Who you don't play every year, though.
Yeah.
Well, back to San Jose State. We don't need to veer off to Boise State. We'll get to them down the road once we get to the Mountain Division. I forget what I said in our Fresno show. I probably should remember these things per game, but I could see San Jose State getting the win, but it'll be pretty close. But if we go overall, I'm kind of leaning more after looking at who they have back and everything, doing some research. Before, I was thinking they lose Irvin. He's a huge piece they lost. They're not going to be that good, but I'm wondering if a bowl game is somewhat close just because part of it's the West isn't very good. They do play some tough teams out of the Mountain Division, Air Force, Boise, New Mexico, two of the three on the road. I think it's next year where they'll take a big step. But I think a bowl game will be somewhat in contention, but not quite this year.
So what do you guys have as the overall record for the Spartans?
I think I'll tell you right now. I got 1, 2, 3, 4. I have 5 and 7.
Jeremy?
Let's see. Sorry, I was typing that down so I have it for the record when we publish this. See, the only guarantee I have is probably Portland State. If you go by, like I mentioned, it's probably every show. Like talent-wise, that's probably the only team they're really more dominant than. But I think I'm probably 5 and 7 because I could see them beating Portland State. Yes, Iowa State, Hawaii, Nevada. Maybe UNLV or Fresno. I got to go 4 and 8, but yeah, I got to go 4 and 8 just because of so many toss-up games for who they have on the schedule. And saying Iowa State's one of your beating a Big 12 team, but they're not very good, it's okay. But I think 4 and 8 is probably where I see them finishing, because also when you play 9 straight weeks, that's a tough task for any team to take on.
Then I guess I must be the optimist. I have them at 7 and 5.
Whoa, sound the alarm. How do you get 7?
You also had the win against Air Force. You have a win against Air Force, and you have a win against Iowa State. So that's where.
Yeah, I have wins at Tulsa, at home versus Portland State.
Oh, right. I forgot. Iowa, yes.
At Iowa State, Hawaii, Nevada, UNLV, and Air Force.
So 7 and 5, I believe that's your best record for any West team so far.
So far.
Well, I know obviously the Aztecs everybody will pick them to win. So you're saying they would be the second best team in the West, perhaps?
By looking at my standings, yeah, I guess it would be.
So what would your ceiling be? Like who, like you said, like who do you think, if you're already at 7 and 5, could they get to like maybe 9 wins? Any chance?
Absolutely. I think if they're led by the offense in a way that I think is possible. You know, if the offense rebounds and scores 30 points a game, this is a team that could beat nearly anybody on their schedule, I think. Because, you know, New Mexico doesn't have a great defense. Boise State doesn't have a great defense, you know, and admittedly, Fresno State doesn't have a great defense either. So if this offense clicks early and plays at a high level all season long, you know, like I said last week again, you know, when we were talking about Nevada, it's a team that could challenge San Diego State for the division title, that could surprise. So I think the ceiling is double-digit wins if everything comes together and the defense can keep up. Because there's a lot of good young talent on this team, which is something that you can't say for a lot of the other teams in the division.
That makes sense. I kind of agree with you. So I'm assuming your guaranteed loss is probably Boise and San Diego State?
I mean, I'm hedging a little bit.
Yeah, I get it. I agree with you, too. I see a big swing. I just don't think them are able. I don't think the Spartans can get it this year. I wouldn't be surprised if they go 8 or 9 wins because UNLV is at home. I don't think Air Force, but Hawaii, New Mexico, Nevada, UNLV, those are all teams that are, talent-wise, it's almost a wash.
Well, I mean, one thing that we didn't really talk about that I think is worth noting is that, you know, Chris, I know, likes the defense probably more than either of us. But, you know, even despite the talent that they lost or that they had last year, they didn't have really good turnover luck. They only forced 12 turnovers on the season, and they were better at taking care of the ball than most of the other teams in the conference. You know, they finished at a -5 on the year. So if they could get a few more bounces going their way than they did last year, you never know.
Turnover luck is a thing, ladies and gentlemen. Don't let it fool you.
Wait till we get to the San Diego State preview where they were quite fortunate last year.
Yeah, but I think the ceiling – I'm with Matt here. I think the ceiling is actually 10-2, but I also think that the low point is 4-8, which is what Jeremy has them. I'm a little bit more optimistic. I don't think a 2-10 is – you know, going to be it, but I think 4-8, I'm confident in 4 wins. I don't know how many more they can get at this point.
I mean, to me, I think it's, you know, the swing games to me are kind of those non-conference games at Tulsa and at Iowa State. Like, if they're inconsistent the same way that they were last year, I think the floor for this team is probably that same 5-7 range where, you know, they have it all together some weeks and they just don't have it in other weeks. But either way, I think there's a lot of reasons to be excited in San Jose because they're building towards something really interesting in the next year or two.
I agree. It could be the case. It'll be – and being in the – that's why, like, I go low, but in the West, it's – so many toss-up games. So, yeah, I'm agree with you. I don't think they get 10, but I would not be surprised if they somehow manage 8-4. But I think bowl game is their goal this year, and I think they'll come up short but be in the running till late because the big stretch on their schedule, they don't – like, every part, the easiest part really is – it's not even that easy, really. Iowa State, at New Mexico, mixing Hawaii and Nevada, that's probably their easiest stretch right there, and they might win only one of those games. So that's kind of where I'm at. Like, they could be not hit or miss. I guess kind of hit or miss, but it's going to be like a extreme or low, I guess, for me. All right, so I think that's enough San Jose State talk. We're about an hour. This is 20 minutes less, so you guys have 20 minutes to do something else with your day after listening to this. So congratulations to us for cramming this in, I guess. So we have one team left, San Diego State. So we'll talk about them next time. Unless you guys have any other quick thoughts, I think we're pretty much exhausted Spartans right here, correct?
They're going to be a fun team to watch. That's what I'll say.
I think the passing.
Regardless, they should be fun.
I think the passing. I think we got to see what Ron English does defensively because he's a new guy and maybe he can make some differences over Greg Robinson, especially that rush defense. But I'm excited. Like, I'll make a bold prediction here. I think they could have the second best passing offense in the conference behind Boise State. Is that really bold?
No.
I think it's reasonable.
Okay. So not so bold. Okay. So not bold. Dang, I wanted the bold prediction, but we'll get those down there. But that's our show for tonight. Check us out, mwcconnection.com. We have all these on the playlist over at SoundCloud. You can listen to all 12 previews once they roll out. We're doing West and Mountain this year. So we're at iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play. Thinking of one other spot we're not at, but that's fine. Give us a review. We have a couple, so give us a 5-star if you'd like, and then yell at us in the comments that we're terrible or we don't know what we're talking about, which 20%.
Happens quite frequently.
Yeah, we can say that. 20% we're wrong, I'd say, at least. So Yeah, so I got Greek, Greek Padre on Twitter there. Matt K underscore FS on Twitter. That's the correct one there. And our site's at MWC Connection. So we'll see you guys next time. We'll be talking San Diego State or whatever team you want to listen to next. It's your choice on our playlist.